Yes, it's really great to have you on, Sean. I've been wanting to sit down and have a conversation with you for a while now, and by the looks of it, you've been like an extremely busy guy over the last few months, making appearances on mainstream media in relation to the UFO issue, and doing your best to keep the momentum going. And so, I really do appreciate you taking the time to sit down and do this with me.
Thanks for having me. You and I have been kind of touching base a little bit here and there, but I think you do understand that it was that inaccessibility that led to the that helped lead to where we are right now. So that now we're here, it really is time to have some of these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. How are you actually, how are you feeling in light of your recent media appearances? Are you feeling good about the overall direction when it comes to kind of like the gradual increase in transparency and decrease in stigma? Are you happy with the process so far?
In general, I'm quite happy. I think like a lot of us, I never thought we'd actually get here.
Right.
Now that we find ourselves here, you got to kind of take a deep breath and get back to work. But with granted, of course, there's the obfuscation within the Department of Defense. There's still the
Right.
big questions of why this has been, shielded from us for so long. But I'm quite happy with the momentum we're seeing.
Well, I definitely want to get into some of the talks about obfuscation because it's definitely important to keep that in mind when we're addressing this. Yeah, I definitely want to pick up on that. Now, most of the people listening to this will know who you are, but just so this can be a kind of like a standalone podcast for any newcomers, could you just provide some background into your military career and also why you're now involved in a public-facing effort to reduce the stigma surrounding this issue of UFOs?
Certainly. My name's Sean Cahill. In 2004, I was stationed on board the USS Princeton as the Chief Master at Arms when we encountered what's now famously known as the Tic Tac. I assisted Senior Chief Kevin Day in coordinating efforts of ship movements and coordinating lookouts to try to verify a visual identification of the tracks that they were seeing. I was witness to the F-18s being sortied out, returning and returning with gun camera footage, and witnessed the footage in 2004, like some other people did. Since then, in 2017, Luis Elizondo, and there's a big story in between, of course, but Luis Elizondo resigned in 2017 and frankly made this real for me. In 2004, this was something that, because of the way we reacted to it, I discounted it as our own technology. I thought
Right.
we were so nonchalant that it must have been an advanced program, and that proved to be not the case, as we learned from Luis. So I had to do a quick gear change. I had about 9 months to do it while I in, while I, excuse me, while I investigated Lou, frankly. I have a background in law enforcement, 20 years as a master at arms, specializing in anti-terrorism, interrogation, investigations, things like that. So I was wary of Lou at first. So I spent 9 months investigating him and diving back into what we all tend to call ufology. And when I finally met Luis, when we filmed the series Unidentified Inside America's UFO Investigation together, I had a chance over a period of time to get to know him a little bit. And I knew pretty much right off the bat that I trusted him, but I learned later on that this was a much more serious and far-reaching issue than I understood. I got a little bit of background on ATIP and the five observables, quite a bit before the public got to hear about them. It wasn't secret per se. It just didn't. I think, if I may digress a little, I think what a lot of people haven't seen was that this took a lot of time to find a platform that it could be on,
Right.
that the mainstream media and everybody else was going to listen to, because a lot of folks, have been doing this long before we came on the scene.
Yeah, no,
So.
absolutely. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Did I cut out then?
No, I was digressing, and then I didn't know where to pick the thread back up.
Oh
So
no,
I
you were doing
left it to you.
you were doing fantastic, don't worry. And yeah, so there's been this kind of continuation of all of these events that have kind of catalyzed around 2017 with the December New York Times story. And I'm wondering, is there any sort of specific moment for you from this time scale of 2017 up to present day where you really felt like, oh wow, this is a different conversation now. The ball is really rolling.
I think for a lot of us, the New York Times article was obviously a seismic shock. I think for the people in the community, it really shook us awake. And that was when a lot of us started looking at this differently, looking at this as something that might have a chance for the first time. And that maybe if we looked at this in a more mainstream way as advocacy, and even at the edges of it, a certain evangelization to at least, you know, bring people on board and go, look, this is pretty heavy. Let's take a look at this together. But then the 60 Minutes article, if New York Times was a seismic shock, this was a hydrogen bomb. I mean, it really changed things. And it's really been nonstop since. So the operational tempo is incredibly high for us right now. We've hit every continent but Antarctica, almost every major news service, almost on a daily basis. Lou and I are doing 3 to 5 interviews a day some days. Today, you're the only one I have scheduled. So it feels like a refreshing day off where I get to kind of have a conversation instead of a staccato, you know.
Oh, totally, totally. Because it's all, you know, you're just going over the same talking points, the same sort of rhetoric. And it's, I guess it's kind of refreshing to just sit back and have a bit, to kind of talk shop a bit more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, well, you know, I've definitely noticed a shift in the level of severity that this issue is being given by mainstream media personalities. You know, I'm no longer hearing like the X-Files music being played or cliche one-liners being touted, or at least not to the same level of intensity as previously. And also alongside this, I'm beginning to see elements of the conversation permeate into the British mainstream press, which is really good. Are you aware of any impending efforts for larger scale engagement with international media? Because this conversation can't remain confined to, you know, the United States forever. I mean, obviously, we've got the 60 Minutes piece that really did permeate out to a wider audience. But are you aware of anything in the pipeline to kind of increase that radius any further?
Well, believe it or not, there's been quite a bit. I've done Globo News in Brazil. I've done a Middle Eastern station. I did talk radio and in
oh yeah, I was excited to see that. Yeah,
I did BBC News last night.
Oh no way!
I haven't gotten a chance. Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to find a link to it or see it yet. But we were on BBC News last night.
Oh, that's brilliant! Well done.
They've asked us to come back, and almost fantastic. Every single outlet we've spoken to has maintained in touch. They've asked for follow-on information. So we've been providing them with relevant sightings throughout the course of the years. We've been trying to open this up and show people that this is not just since 2004,
in
2017. We didn't come out the gate talking about that, but now that it's ensconced, now we can go, hey, everybody, take a look, pull back a little bit. This has been going on since post-World War II, at least, you know, and that's kind of another place we can put the marker for the average folks. And I think that a lot of them, based on popular television shows and things, aren't going to take that long to get closer to where a lot of us in the community feel that we want them to be. And then we can start opening up the avenues of this that frankly are going to be uncomfortable as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real. There's edges of this that are just, that are either ugly or completely misunderstood or both.
Absolutely. I'm very encouraged by the fact that you've had such positive feedback from these news media outlets, and that they've invited you back and they want you to interact. And you're right, you know, eventually, you know, this is about packaging it in a way that is in some way palatable and transferable to a lot, even to a larger demographic. And as you and I know, and a lot of the people listening, this is a subject with, you know, some pretty deep conversations lurking in the bottom that haven't even come close to the surface yet. So, you know, there's a lot to kind of get into. Right. Now, you work really closely with the former director of the ATIP program, Luis Elizondo, who has experienced some pretty intense backlash from certain entities within the government, most notably within channels of the Department of Defense. I'm just wondering if you yourself have experienced any level of negative feedback from government groups or individuals in relation to your public facing role in trying to get the UFO issue addressed and taken seriously? Have you, like Lou, experienced a certain level of pushback or even attempts at, you know, disinformation or defamation of your character, anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of at this point. I've been very fortunate, but I don't have the same level of interface with the government, and I don't have the same vested interest in maintaining I don't know, the respect of the government or vice versa at the moment. But Lou still has a very vocal and very optical role in this. So he's an easy target for these folks. So I think I'm lucky right now. I haven't come up on their radar, but you never know.
It definitely seems to me that there is, alliances within government, and that there's pockets of influence and pockets of support, and there's also pockets of division. And it's not easy to get this, this giant structure to communicate concisely with itself and to streamline that process. Now, I've actually had individuals, because I want to talk about the UAP task force just a little bit. I've had people tell me that the UAP task force is actually larger than is being publicly presented. I think the public image that is visualized right now when it comes to the UAPTF is it's almost this kind of ragtag grassroots attempt at initiating action. It sounds as if it's being run by a couple of people, but I've been told that it's actually quite an expansive operation. And I'm just wondering if you're able to comment on the overall size of the group and whether or not the public image is a misrepresentation or not.
I think it's, this is one of those instances where we have to be careful, because within government and in military service, we use words and acronyms very specifically. So like this, there is no operation because this is a task force. So by definition, it is whatever the tasking states. Now, whoever the personnel are that have been placed in charge of the task force, they are the task force. Now, they will be imbued with certain authority to reach out amongst networks that they have access to and areas where they have jurisdiction and authority to delegate authority, to order certain agencies or personnel to provide certain things or services. So I think that what people may be misrepresenting is, of course, there are more than a couple of people working on the larger problem. All of it is within the bounds of the law, but there is not a larger operation going on. That's a semantic explanation. You know what I'm saying? Even a military operation like Operation Enduring Freedom had the personnel that were within the operation, and then there were peripheral logistical support apparatus. So the task force is the small task force it is. And of course, there are more people working the issue. I would say that's a true statement.
Have you got, what's your level of optimism in regards to the UAP report, the pending report?
I'd say that when I'm optimistic about a final report. I don't know if we're going to get what we're all hoping for to begin with. But I think that if nothing else, it's going to reveal the cracks in the system, because there are too many of us now that know, that are willing to step up and say, we know there's data in the following soup bowls. And if you weren't forthcoming with that data, we're going to expose where the data was. And now you have bigger questions to answer of why you didn't cooperate, or who was negligent in withholding the information. So
do you think that there's
it's a muddy pool?
Yeah, no, for sure. Absolutely. Do you think that there's do you think that the level of interest in Congress and in the Senate is at the point that it should be in relation to the kind of information that's come out already? Like, are you seeing the right level of engagement from that surface level of bureaucracy?
I would like to see a more serious take by more of our legislators than I've seen so far. But I don't want to do that at the risk of creating some kind of artificial threat narrative.
Right.
That's a phrase that gets thrown around so much. And I know that the folks that I work with, we're not trying to influence anyone. We're trying to state what's being observed, and we're trying to show the data that is unclassified that we can, but we're not here to make conclusions for people. So there is no narrative to this. There's data, reports, and then the American people, in this case, have to decide what to do next.
I agree with you that there's not a specific narrative, but there's definitely a structure, even if it's just a linguistic structure in terms of how it's being modeled and phrased in the public sector when it comes to is this Russian, is this Chinese? Oh, we're not quite sure, and there's. there isn't that deep level of conversation yet. We're not willing to really go out there and say it could be extraterrestrial, it could be alien. Like, you're not hearing that as much as perhaps should be attributed to this phenomenon, especially because I think one issue that I have with this, and I wanted to get into it a little bit further down the line, but we might as well jump into it now, is this idea of governmental culpability. Because, you know, you can say it's Russian or Chinese, but at a certain point, there is a history to this phenomenon which stretches back, you know, before the Wright brothers created aerial platforms. And so, you know, there is this conversation, there's a rift, there's a void in the information that's coming out in the mainstream, because people, you know, for the most part within the mainstream arena, don't know about the history and don't really understand the history to that extent. So I suppose, you know, there isn't a narrative per se that I would say that I'm seeing, especially not a threat narrative. You know, I don't see this as drumming up fear, you know, over this issue. But I definitely think that there's a specific structure to this, that we're trying to ease people into something that's very intimidating, as you were saying before.
If I may, I think that we, I think that that makes sense, because I have to be honest. I'm curating the data that's in my head. It's not the explosive secrets that some people think that folks are withholding.
Right.
But at the same time, I've blown people's minds at cocktail parties before. Oh, and yeah. I regret that. Yeah. I really do. And, I see the American public as something, none of us want to be curated. Nobody wants their hand held. They want it all right now. And most of us usually regret it after we get that, frankly. But yeah, there's people that are trying to be careful and to teach people that we know don't know anything. But I'm not having the same conversation with you that I would have with Chris Cuomo or with Tucker Carlson. Because you and I have a different experience with the phenomenon than we're aware of everyone else having. So our boundaries of this are different. But let me go back for a second and say this. I think what we're seeing right now, narrative-wise, is a form follows function kind of thing. Because the first reports that mainstream media and government decided to pay attention to were when what we call incursions occurred on the East and West coasts with our military forces and their training areas. That got everybody's attention. So the first reports that are coming out that everyone is seeing are going to be those reports that got people's attention. So when I send a list to when I send information to a producer, I send them a timeline of notable military sightings that have government evidence that backs them up with the chain of custody and everything else. Yeah. The only reason that I'm not including major civilian sightings that have in some cases just as much data, usually not like radar data or something like that, but the reason I'm not including those yet is because the only thing the media is interested in right now is what they see is that gravitas that comes with the military witnesses. I think we're going to graduate out of that. I do. I really think education over the next few years is going to help us understand this a lot more for all of us.
I'm really, really excited about where it's going to go in the next few years. You know, as a young man, I have a really optimistic view of where this might end up in the future. So, you know, my fingers are crossed for an adaptation on the narrative and an expansion on the discussion. Especially, actually, I would love to gauge your thoughts on just when you think that the conversation of experiences might enter into the mainstream arena. You know, where do you put that on the timeline personally?
Oh, wow. Probably a year or two down the road in my estimation, only based on, but I think that we're going to get there in a lot shorter time than we think, only because it is the natural next step. Once folks realize that this, you know, I think a lot of us, as we say in the community, we realize this is a very prevalent phenomenon. Mm-hmm. In some ways, a lot of us think it's more prevalent these days than it was in recent times. If that's the case, then I think we're going to have more sightings. We're going to have more people seeing this, and the conversation is going to open up quickly. But the next logical step is, well, has anybody met these guys? Right. People ask me a lot about why didn't you guys try to contact them and this, that, and the other. That's not our job. It's it takes away from the safety and the operational risk environment that we're in and things like that for an F-18 pilot that's flying at Mach 0.8 in a tight circle around a UFO to go, what frequency should I transmit on? You know, it's I don't mean to be so jokey about it, but it's kind of like being on the bus and someone goes, the Russians are coming, tell the bus driver to call the president. It's like, well, how does he have the number? Yeah. Well, how does he do that? How does he get, you know? So it's just, I think as we move forward, the questions have to be asked. We have to talk to the people who claim to be having direct contact through meditation modalities, to people who are claiming to have physical daylight 3D contact with folks. I don't agree that our government has to be the only ones to reproduce those results for everyone else. You know what I mean? So yeah. That's why I'm just wary. I'm very wary.
Well, no, I think the next natural step really should be to be some sort of communication method. And, you know, even if it's not, because obviously the discussion of non-local consciousness and meditative states expanding your, you know, ability to transform and transmit information, that's a pretty intense conversation that's either wrapped up in what people would see as kind of spiritual woo-woo or what is complex quantum mechanics jargon, and is not really a good middle ground for that discussion right now. But even more elementary forms of contact through kind of, you know, light sequences, tonalities, like anything that can reach out and provide some sort of handshake, that seems to be the logical, you know, step, because, you know, we know they're here now. We know they're here. That is a discussion. We don't know what they are, apparently, you know, at least in the public realm, we don't 100% know what they are. It seems to me that the next step would be to try and establish some form of communication method.
I think that that's absolutely the perfect next step to go to for our governments and our, you know, and our even our industry, frankly. Yeah. I would love to see a transparent, open sourced public attempt at like Close Encounters of the Third Kind,
right? Yeah.
type scenario, because what do we have to lose at this point? If we agree that this is here and this is real, I guess it's time to do that. It's time to take it seriously. And, you know, even as we get there, maybe we can have fun with it. Maybe there can be a festival atmosphere and a tone of laughter. It doesn't have to be, sure, holy crap, what's going to happen next? But I think we're graduating to that point where we can really start looking at this soon. I mean, we in the community, frankly, we have to look ahead to what's next. Yeah. We have to say, okay, they're paying attention. What is the next step?
Yes, because where does it go? Yeah.
This is where the information is going to come from.
So, you know, just to segue back to kind of pressing current issues that are going on, as a lot of people are aware, the Inspector General, the IG, has been tasked with essentially streamlining the process of information gathering from these various agencies that are required to provide data on the UFO issue from their own research archives or programs for eventual inclusion in this pending UAP report. And I'm just wondering if you've heard much on the grapevine about this. Are you aware of any particular groups, agencies, entities that are being particularly non-compliant in relinquishing their UFO data?
No, I've heard rumblings about the task force, but when it comes to the DOD's Inspector General's office, mm-hmm. I've heard absolutely zero. A proper IG shouldn't have any information coming out, and I haven't heard anything that was an unauthorized informational leak or anything. But I have heard rumors at my level that the task force is encountering some issues within agencies, but I don't want to name any names because I don't have any specifics on that.
Are they ones that we would quite quickly recognize within the UFO community as likely culprits?
I believe so.
If you had total authority to kind of enter every aspect of government, from official agencies to contractors, you know, subcontractors, all access to the black budget programs across the board, you know, which agencies, which groups, which contractors would you personally want to knock on the door of in order to gain some actionable intel?
Oh boy. I think that you could probably pick anybody out of the realm of major defense contractors. And so therefore I'll name them, I'll name all the big boys and say, you know, BAE, Lockheed, Boeing, you know, you name it, that tier of long-term world defense infrastructure is probably where the private sector information is going to be. I think the question is the public sector information is going to be elusive, because if we had an executive oversight of this subject, we should have been able to identify it by now. And since we don't, what I fear is that the infrastructure to gather this data doesn't exist, because it's kind of like when a police officer stops you, if all he can do is ask you a question and can't do a search, that's it. You got anything on you I should know about? No, sir. Just mind my own business tonight. shucks, move along. You know, so if the infrastructure isn't there, and I don't want to get into the basics of human rights and search and seizure, but if there's no infrastructure there for them to find the data, then, you know, we may have an uphill climb. But I maintain a level of optimism, because every single day the phone rings 100 times more than it did yesterday with mainstream media outlets and governmental folks who are interested in no offense to our community, but going around the BS to go, hey, I need to know what's real, you know, before I touch this. So, and that's where, to some extent, we come into this, but we're not the only folks around. You know what I mean? And these aren't secret briefings. They're just, it's the same stuff the UFO community and UFO Twitter already knows, but it's put together in a way that is digestible. So,
and you know, and that's all we can really hope for, is that this continues to expand and we can continue to drop more information into the collective pool and it will keep growing. What worries me, and I think you might have, you kind of hinted at this, so I'd like to gauge your opinion on whether or not you feel that the majority of the, you know, the really juicy information, the most palpable stuff, is perhaps obfuscated within the private sector, within private industry, outside of the governmental oversight, the normal oversight procedures, maybe, you know, exempt pretty much from FOIA and public scrutiny. Do you think that that's probably a likely thing that happened at some historical point in this issue?
I don't know if I would have agreed until you got to the very last part, but opening it up to likely at some point, yeah, I'm sure at some point someone took some information from this subject and kind of wanted to glom onto it and own it for themselves, whether they were a corporation, an individual, or an ideology. The question is did any of them leapfrog us? You know, this is what we're getting into here, is are we looking at a technology that is hyper prevalent and now owned by a portion of humanity or not? I believe that it's probably hyper prevalent in this reality, you know, with the way that it seems to stretch back past, you know, it stretches back past World War II. Most of us in the community.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Pretty happy to say that with certainty. But the question is always going to be, until they quote unquote land or we get a good look, who's in these things? Is it some of us? Is it some of us and some of them? Who are them? What's them? Where are they from? You know, the questions are myriad. And is there a them? Is this an artificial intelligence? Are these von Neumann machines that are self-replicating Tic Tacs? You know, that's that's a very intriguing question.
Yeah.
So sky's the limit to an extent.
Sky's the limit. Yeah. What do you personally see? literally, quite literally. is there anything that you see missing from the mainstream conversation? I mean, obviously, the discussion occurring within government and major media, you know, to some extent, at least in relation to the overarching and deeply rooted issues of the UFO discussion, it's a relatively tame discussion in comparison. And so there are plenty of things that are missing from the current mainstream narrative. But if you had to pick, you know, one issue or two issues that are currently not being addressed or not being talked about enough in relation to UFOs, can you think of anything that you feel needs to be a part of the modern emerging discussion?
Well, I think that one of the very first things that I try to educate folks on is the fact that this is not new.
Yeah.
And that this is not, ATIP wasn't the first program or the second program or the sixth program within our structure to investigate this, and then kind of stick its head out and look around and go, uh-oh, they saw me, and disappear again. And, you know, if you look at the history of it, we We do it, we debunk it, we cancel it, we rename it, we start it again. They find out about the program, we debunk it, we do it again. And in this case, we got somebody that resigned. So I want folks to know that I think for right now, where I focus the needle on my record is UFOs are real. They are unidentified flying objects. And we have not been able to identify them over a large period of the history of this modern country and the world, frankly. And now that's a fact that we know. I just want to start there, you know, so that's, it's funny because we keep going around all of the data to go, well, are aliens real? Do we have evidence of aliens, 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 aliens? Of course, that's the most important question at the end of this that we all want to know, but that's kind of like going to the movies and watching the finale first. I don't know how we're supposed to learn that ahead of time.
The journey is just as fun. Yeah. The journey is just as fun as the destination, right? Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was recently I was lucky enough to go see my grandparents for the first time in almost 2 years because of COVID and everything. I just got back, had a great time, and they're aware of what I do, and my mom is extremely supportive, and you know, she tunes in, so she'll be listening to this. So shout out to mom. but what I found, and this was interesting for me to do because I've spoken about the fact that the emerging conversation from 2017 up to present day, it's a very useful blueprint for initiating the uninitiated. You know, you have this relatively easy to digest understanding. And I think it's more the fact that it's coming from these very serious channels of communication from the Office of Naval Intelligence, from the Pentagon, DOD. And so, you know, whenever I'm speaking to someone who I encounter and I start talking and they go, so what do you do? What is it that you do, Jay? And I'm like, oh, okay. How do I best figure out how to do this? I will start with the fact that, you know, in 2017, the New York Times came out with this, and I'll go across those talking points. So it's a very profoundly, you know, important blueprint that allows for that conversation. You know, I spoke with my grandparents about it. They were very interested. My granddad's like a PhD chemist and, you know, quite a materialist. And, you know, it's taken him some time to try and absorb and understand that this could be possible. But one thing that we did is we sat down and we watched The Phenomenon by James Fox. And, you know, that was a really quite profound thing for my granddad to watch, because he had this overwhelming sense that this was, you know, at this point, undeniable that there was at least something. And, you know, yeah, as you were saying, we don't know what it is, but there is something, and whatever it is doing stuff that we don't really understand. And that in of itself, sorry for going off on a tangent, but that in of itself amazes me, that the UFO, regardless of what it literally is, what it does is quite simple. It challenges and dismantles almost everything that we understand about physics, about, you know, thermodynamics, about gravity, about, you know, it just its presence alone, without any words, it is a symbol of, you know, catalyzing change, and literally demands you to challenge the status quo of reality that we currently have. So that to me is fascinating. And I just hope that more people will end up seeing it in that light, you know, in that intrigue.
I think that's the edges of where people worry about what we call disclosure, because it's easy to see that we, without judging each other, without being too harsh, we both know that we know a lot of people who aren't ready to know themselves.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, so challenging that paradigm of a, you know, of what reality is and all that. I've been with people, we've seen things, not everyone saw something.
Yeah.
And yeah, most of us saw something a little bit different, but some people saw nothing.
Yeah.
And it's still a very interesting question about the psychological blocks. I mean, that's, I think you and I, if we were alone having a pint, the consciousness conversation could go on for 6 hours.
Yes.
But it's, that's the edge of this that I find most interesting most days. But the other end of the spectrum, it still connects to that, if that makes sense. The nuts and bolts are somehow connected to our perceptual, more than just what we see. There is some software issues going on here, it seems. So
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. And you know, one thing I'd love to ask is just, you know, what what is it you think that about people like us? I mean, people within the UFO community who find out about something like this and just go, oh my gosh, this is fascinating. Like, I need to know more. And then, you know, because like you were just saying, you find people and they just don't care. Either it conflicts with their worldview and they have like that kind of aggressive, mm-hmm. like, no, or they just don't care. And that's the one that really gets me, because it's like the passivity of it, like, but this is something so tremendously important for us as a species. And you know, why are we wired this way? What's wrong with us?
I'm not sure. It might be man, I don't want to lump all of us into one category.
No, of course not. Yeah,
like there's a few things that are common. There's a commonality, but these are common human traits too. But there's a commonality of a certain amount of trauma early on for a lot of folks. I'm actually now starting to look at. I'm curious how prevalent is what we call ADHD,
right?
With experiencers or pronounced anxiety. How are some folks a little bit more tuned up? So they're noticing and sampling reality at maybe a different frame rate than other people. And so therefore there's comorbidities with ADHD and things like that would go to the intense interest. But what I find fascinating is you've got people who are what we would call in the community experiencers. I think their interest is obvious. You've got people who have experienced things in consciousness and they're like, man, what the heck was that? I got to find out what more about that. And then there's those. What interests me the most are the people who have no experience across the board and have a zeal for this that rivals my own. And this is what I do for a living. Those folks I'm more interested in, because they really want to know what's going on in a way that I can't even fathom.
Yeah.
And I'm just as confused. So.
Well, I think the further down this road I've got, the more confused I become, in all honesty. It's one of those, you know, it's an interesting journey. You learn something, and then that kind of makes you realize that you don't know much at all in the grand scheme of things when it comes to the universe. I know you meditate and you know, you likely have your own ideas about a spiritual journey or the mysteries of consciousness, and it's subtle connections to the intuitive, subjective, synchronistic, you know, experiences that one goes through as they traverse life and develop as an individual, you know, which tend to, if you pay attention to things, at least from my own experience, if you pay attention to things in your life that through self-reflection and a bit of introspection, you know, as an individual, you seem to gravitate towards a path of spiritual development in some way or another. At least that's what I've noticed with people that I've spoken with and from, you know, my own personal journey. And I try to engage as much as possible, to the extent to which my understanding will allow, with the scientific method. You know, I try and articulate myself in the most sensible way that's palatable to people, but I can't ignore the profoundly mysterious experiences that I've gone through, you know, that relate directly to the ability for consciousness to interact independently of this localized field of the human brain. So, you know, my own experiences have solidified my understanding that consciousness is not generated by the brain, does not die when the brain dies, and could be closer attributed to like a field phenomenon that we're submerged within or arose from, that we as humans are kind of, you know, almost like crystallized points of consciousness that have emerged from the raw energy, from the, you know, from the consciousness itself, which is derived. And as many people listening will know, my own experiences with the phenomenon, which in their most vivid state took this form of orange orbs of light in various configurations, kind of interacting and behaving in a way that is beyond, well, in my opinion, it's beyond the possibility of a misidentification of some, you know, generic occurrence like an atmospheric anomaly or a series of lanterns or flares. You know, my experiences were pretty undeniable, and they occurred to me, you know, due to me entering a meditative state and making a coherent and direct request for some sort of contact. So, and you know, this was profoundly life-changing for me. This really is the keystone of what created Project Unity, of why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I had these phenomenal experiences that opened up a different avenue of thinking. And I'm just wondering if you yourself, you kind of hinted that you've done this kind of stuff. So have you had some very vivid experiences yourself through utilizing these types of methods?
I have. I've had very vivid experiences within consciousness while meditating. As you said, when asking for a specific experience, I suppose, or access to a specific experience. I ran away with my tail between my legs the first time it happened. And it's actually been a journey of understanding that moment. Because for me, it's actually been more about realizing not be careful what you wish for, you might get it, but are you sure you want what you're asking for? Because in that moment, if what I was experiencing was real, I chose to turn away from it. I didn't choose to deny it, but I chose to, for me, it's almost been like, okay, that happened, good enough. Like I'm not ready. I've seen where my own boundaries are with this. So, but let me, what I really enjoy when I have time, when I'm not focused on, because this takes a lot of cerebral,
of course,
power to do the logistics that are behind getting us in front of the folks we want to and the communications and things that go on.
Yeah, yeah.
It is very strategic. But at the same time, I, as you say, I'm a meditator. Before I met Lou, that was what I was doing. I was teaching people to get out of their own hell,
yeah,
and just find enough peace to realize, well, they were enough in themselves to keep going forward, that they didn't need all these crutches and other people to constantly hold on to, that your breath was going to be enough for now, and you could start somewhere. Something I really enjoy... when I'm not really locked into all of this thinking is synchronicity chasing.
Yeah, tell me about it.
that it's something that's taught me that it's there. The flow is there. It's there when I want to access it. If I need to be more computer-like and analytical, I can be. But when I want to open myself up again, that whatever it is there. And when I was explaining Jungian synchronicity to someone who's very close and important to me that I hadn't seen in a long time, they were like, well, can you give me an example of a synchronicity? And I discussed Jung's scarab beetle experience with his patient. And when I put my hand out and said scarab beetle, a black beetle landed in my hand in front of all of the people standing there.
And
I was just filled with that beautiful feeling of knowing what I was experiencing. And I looked at everyone else going, holy crap. And I go, kind of like that right there. And I hate
the shades
bugs
on and walk away.
And I picked them up and I put them on my shoulder and we kept walking. I don't like bugs at all. But we walked down the street with like four people just going.
That's amazing.
And if you've experienced that, or if you've realized that the more you ask for it, the more you give into it, somehow it seems to go, okay, here, have another one.
Yeah.
It's that's something that I find so fascinating. So I want to know what that is.
I love that. No, I completely agree with you. It's funny you talked about the fact that having that experience was, you know, almost enough for you, and that you felt like you'd found your limits. And it's funny because it you know, relatively similar to me, in all honesty. Like I have gone out and tried to initiate this type of contact again, but in all honesty, just as like a personal lull, I guess, as we all go up and down, I've kind of swayed off of meditation as much. I've just been so involved in doing research and doing all of this and keeping up that I've kind of negated that aspect of me, and I need to definitely get myself back in that alignment. But I think with the contact as well, I didn't want to trivialize it. You know, it felt like it was a very profound series of events that occurred. You know, I saw all sorts of weird things when I was first trying to do this, but then there were these four kind of like definitive moments which happened over the course of about a month, which were these visitations of these orange orbs, which was just such a step up. And, you know, it was so vivid and unexplainable. And once I had those experiences, it was just kind of like, I don't know, it just some, it, it, I didn't want to, I didn't want to trivialize it. I didn't want to go out there and just be like, right, time for a light show, you know, show, like whatever that was, it is so powerful. It was so life-changing. And yeah, similar to you, it's like, right, well, for now, that's enough. But I also know that I have that ability to tap into that field, into that flow, into that state. And I have no doubt that if I really, really felt like it was needed or necessary for that type of thing to be initiated again, that I'd probably be able to do it. And, you know, I started Project Unity literally just, you know, putting a phone up in the middle of the forest on a tree branch and talking to the people that I didn't know existed, you know, going like, I had this contact scenario and talking about consciousness. And as things have evolved and gone forward, and I've had some lucky breaks, and I've talked to some really interesting people like yourself and like Lou, and you know, it's made me try and package myself in a way that's more palatable, because my, you know, even though it's a little splash in the pond, my demographic's increasing, and I'm just trying to find the best way to address this kind of stuff and play for the team, you know, not be like the crazy guy in the corner that's just yamming on about, you know, contacting orange orbs through your mind. And, you know.
Self-awareness is key.
For sure, it's totally key. But it's also like, yeah, these components are so important to me, and I just really want to see them discussed, because I do think that once science, and I think that through quantum theory and quantum physics, the emergence of new models of reality, we are going to kind of get this moment of concrescence, of coalescing between you know, science and spirituality, or physics and metaphysics. You know, would you agree with that? Do you think we're heading in that route?
I do. I really do. I think that that we're going to see a lot of meaning come to this that that we may not have expected. A lot of that we're going to have to find on our own. But I do worry, because so many of us that have encountered this, we struggle for meaning.
Yeah.
And we struggle so hard for it that for me personally, I've given up on a lot of the meaning and tried to just, you know, kind of flow with it and see what happens, because I've seen so darn much. I really want to see it through. So, but back to what you said about the melding of those, of the material and the spiritual, for lack of a word. I originated in my practice with Sam Harris, who's an atheist, but even Sam, I like the way that I always point people to him first when they ask me, where should I go to meditate? Because I like that he gives a clean process that allows you to access self and that magical conduit within you. So you can go, oh, wow. And then determine for yourself what it's going to mean to you instead of listening to someone else say it. So I really hope, I look to Sam a lot. I look forward to getting to speak to him. I'd like to speak to him about this subject in a public forum if we can. We're working on that with some other folks, but
that's brilliant. Yeah,
I think he could be such a help in having people understand that spirit and pneuma and selfhood and that spark inside of us doesn't have to be super steeped in dogma. It's the first stage of personal spirituality, you know. At least that's my opinion.
No, I absolutely agree. And you know, I do think that we're approaching this point where scientific models will start to look too much like spirituality for it to not be a part of the conversation. It's like, oh, hang on a second, like everything seems to be made of a conscious energy. So, you know, is that what they called God? And it's like, oh, here we go. A whole other can of worms has now been opened up for us to discuss and ponder about as a civilization. You know, it's kind of interesting with the consciousness aspect, especially when it comes to the ongoing current narrative and dialogue that's happening in the States, because one thing that intrigues me is the fact that, well, you know, the American discussion is primarily based around a series of unknowns that are impacting national security and challenging military superiority. Whereas, and this, you know, this I found to be quite interesting, and obviously it doesn't extend to the entirety of you know, the government or this country, but in Russia, and I'll soon be speaking with a Russian cosmonaut trainer who was also the director of a Russian-backed UFO study group called Association Ecology Unknown, or the AEU. Now, the narrative over there seems to be based around the necessity for a development of a code of ethics for interacting with What they quite clearly see as extraterrestrial intelligences, and within the AEU's kind of code of ethos and their explanations of what they're doing, they claim to have made contact with these intelligences through the utilization of extrasensory abilities. So this would be, you know, methods like we were just discussing, like remote viewing and other non-local consciousness modalities. And the AEU speaks about the emergence of what is categorized, and I hadn't heard this before, of Russian cosmism. Where have you heard of this before?
No.
Well, it seems to be like
a brand new phrase.
Yeah, Russian cosmism. It seems to be like an ideological model for reality, where basically the model of the universe within it is that of a living entity. So it's very much in alignment with the idea of conscious universe, that consciousness itself is an integral component of the underlying, substructure of reality, and that we should be establishing peaceful methods of contact, communication, and eventually collaboration with what are viewed as superior intelligences within our universe. And, this is a really bold approach. The AEU is actually it's registered under the Ministry of Justice of the Russian Federation. And there's a couple of people in it who are quite high profile. And, I have to admit, I do prefer this to the more vague and kind of militaristic narrative that's coming from the halls of American government. So why do you think there's such a stark contrast in regards to the handling of this issue between America and for example, Russia?
Well, I'm not familiar with the group that you're discussing. I haven't heard of them. I haven't seen their agenda. For me as an American service member, Russia's ability and intent to destabilize American activity within the world is something that means that I don't really get my data from Russia.
Of course, yeah.
In the same way that, yeah. So while I think that's great, there are plenty of other, and I'm not trying to be catty about it, there are other folks out there like Farsight Institute. I'll mention Courtney Brown and Farsight Institute. There are other alternatives that are trying to do the same thing. My problem is this: if I get five friends and I go say that we did these things, that we did these contact modalities, and then, and imagine that even if I do something like film a remote viewing session like Courtney's folks do, or even if I were to be more bold to record a extended remote viewing session, which if you know what extended remote viewing is, it's called mediumship and channeling. There shouldn't be anyone pretending it's any different.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're doing the exact same process, it's the exact same process. It's just a semantics argument. But again, we're talking about anecdotal experience. Now, if you and I could go down to Stanford and we had a brainwave machine that could finally, put what we were experiencing on the television, and the rest of us watch Jay or Sean, go into a trance, and here comes, I won't make up a jokey name, but here comes an alien entity or something yeah, non-human, and begins communicating. That's utterly fantastic. And how we would still believe each other with that is a whole nother story. But right now, all we've got, okay, now I'm going to be catty about it, because I try these things out. But right now, all we got is people taking a nap and telling us a story, and we have to believe it. So we haven't proven to everybody else that these modalities, these means of communication are anything beyond imagination. We've got data from SRI. We've got data that's matriculated out of the declassified CIA documents from Stargate and other programs. But proving that as a truism to each other is where we're screwed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because how are we going to believe each other? And right now, I don't trust Russia telling me that Velveeta cheese melts well. No offense to them. I want a world where we all cooperate and don't have this nonsense between us.
It's such an unfortunate thing, isn't it? I mean, obviously, yeah, it's all born from very real issues of conflict and counterintelligence, and there's no denying that whatsoever. It's just such a shame, because these are issues that could really, and this is why we're all doing what we're doing, what you're doing, because these issues really can unite people and bring people together. And I genuinely do have a certain degree of hope and optimism for that. It's interesting that China, I'm sure you've seen this, that China recently has kind of made some announcements, and they've even got artificial intelligence in the game now, apparently. Do you know much about this? Is there anything that you can say?
I haven't finished reading the article yet. I saw the headline and I skimmed it, but player three has definitely entered the game. I mean, this is everybody's arrived. The rest of the world is probably getting their popcorn out and whispering to each other. I knew what was going on all along. but yeah, it's, when you look at the tweets and people, you know, when you see people within your own community going, man, it's starting to feel like a movie.
Oh yeah.
Trust me. It is starting to feel like
I bet it is.
It's kind of weird on this side.
Oh my gosh.
But we're here. I don't think any of us ever, as hard as we tried, there is really kind of a moment for me right now going, man, we're having this conversation. Like I coming out of all of these whirlwind interviews, you and I are finally getting a chance to talk, but we're talking on the heels of the biggest level of attention this has ever gotten within our own community, on Reddit, within the mainstream. So I'm just kind of blown away to be sitting here on a Saturday going, hey, Jay, how's it going?
Yeah, no, dude, same. Honestly, I mean, I do like a series on YouTube called UAP News, where I just kind of try and coalesce some of the most relevant articles and people speaking. And I haven't been able to do it because I've been so busy for the past month and a bit, like kind of doing interviews. I usually have like maybe 10 or 12 relevant articles and stories that I package into these 10, 15 minute videos. This one's going to be like an hour and a half, 2 hours long. I mean, like the past month I've got like 50 different articles to try and put into this video. And I mean, like, could any of us have imagined that there'd be this insane snowball? So it is encouraging. I have to, you know, as someone who's aware of the fact that the British Ministry of Defense, and, you know, I want to see a conversation happening in Britain, because for you guys, you know, turning on your TV, you're seeing this stuff on the news. It's, as you said, you recently did the BBC, which is awesome. And you did LBC. It's starting to happen. That conversation is starting to come across the pond, but there's still just not enough. And I really hope we have some engagement, because the thing is, I know that the British have, you know, we're a Five Eyes Alliance domain country. We have information on this historical data. We don't want to talk about it. We're very, you know, it's I guess it's just that British attitude. It's like, we'll let the Americans boast about this. We're just going to stay quiet and sit here and sip our cup of tea and pretend that nothing's going on. No, I want to see answers from the UK, you know.
It does feel that way, though, doesn't it? Between Canada and Great Britain, it does feel like you guys are going, no, go ahead and lean on this one. We'll be right here.
Yeah. You know, Sean, this has been really great. Actually, you know, one thing I want to bring up just before we kind of wrap up here, because this is something that one of my Patreons asked me if I could ask you about this. Recently, in a blog by Joe Mergia, UFO Joe, there was a rumor that Lou told a trusted contact that they know who is in the sources and that they know who is in the triangles, but that they don't know who is in the Tic Tacs. Are you able to speak towards the authenticity of that statement at all?
Yeah. Bullshit. That is the outline of a fiction story that I've been working on for a few years.
Oh,
I will send you the diagram if you like, but that is literally a diagram that I drew of a story that I was going to write.
You kidding?
Back before I got deeply involved in activism. No, if I'm allowed to say it again, that's bullshit. I will literally send it to you. I've heard the same rumor, and okay. I will I've sent the same diagram to other people, and you just tell me if it matches the rumor you saw. And so you think I would be so flippant as to send it out?
Yeah.
So yeah, it is the outline for the cast of characters in a larger novel I had planned to write before I got involved in this and started bitching about people making money off of it.
That's incredible. Sean, you've been fantastic, mate. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and you know, I hope we have some more dialogue in the future. Is there anything you want to say before we wrap up here?
I just want to say thanks to all of your fans and the people that work so hard with you and all of your guests that you have, because you have some of my heroes on your show often. You've got people in our community that just do the work, man.
And for sure.
I don't get to catch up with all the shows anymore as much, but I really appreciate what you guys have done. I'm sorry it took me so long to get here, but I look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you very much, man.
It's been a privilege.